G'day and welcome to Two Rabbis in a Podcast. I am Rabbi Mordechai Becher.
And I'm Yehoshua Karsh.
And welcome to our new podcast episode, which we haven't had a new episode since before Pesach. We've been busy with preparing for Passover, celebrating Passover, and coming down to earth after Pesach. So
I almost did not recognize you. It's been so long.
Well, also
it took me a second.
I'm hirsute because of the Sefiras HaOmer.
That's true. You're disheveled. Disheveled.
Yes. Very, very disheveled. Hence, yes. This is my state.
In keeping with the spirit of the times.
Correct. Correct. So I'm devolving, so to speak, and becoming turning into Anyway, so our subject for this week is humor. Jewish humor. Does God have a sense of humor? Do we find humor in the Torah? What's the meaning of humor? Why do we laugh? And other fascinating questions about this subject.
I wanted to share something with you, if I could, from yesterday. It just happened yesterday. So for the last couple of months, on Shabbos morning, I've been teaching a group of young boys. They're between the ages of about 7 and 12. So this is while the rabbi's given his drasha in shul, I am studying with these boys, and we're learning Mishnayos. We're learning Mishnayos brachos. We're around a table. I'd say there were 8 or 9 kids and me around a table. So we're sitting closely to each other. It's not like I'm sitting in the front of the room and they're in. So we're sort of sitting close. And the thing is about this, it's not a classroom per se. In other words, I'm trying not to use discipline, very strongly. This is Shabbos, and I don't want to be their disciplinarian. So what ends up happening is there's a lot of chatter. There's just like chatter around the table. And when we're learning, it's trying to sort of fit the information in some kind of slot. Every once in a while, everybody's paying attention for about 5 to 10 seconds, but mostly it's some of them paying attention, the other one's not, and it's constantly shifting. So when you...
Sounds like college.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure it's exactly the same when you're in college. With men, with boys, it doesn't really change that much. So anyway, so that's the atmosphere. So we're at the beginning of the second parak. We're talking about what happens if you're reading from the Torah and you happen to read the Shema reading from the Torah. You don't have kavana, you don't have intent to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. You're just sort of reading it. So it's an opportunity to talk about kavana, et cetera. So I asked them, what are you supposed to be thinking about when you say the Shema? When they talk about having kavanah to say Shema, what are you supposed to be thinking about? And one of the kids said, you're supposed to be thinking about Kabbalas Olmal HaShemayim, that you accept the yoke of heaven. So I translated it for them because one of them said it. I don't know if all of them knew it. So I translated it. I said, that means that you're accepting the yoke of heaven. We talked about what that means. And then one of the kids, Nachi Gold, he just blurted out, well, if you can't eat yolks, then you'd have to accept the egg whites of heaven. Now, everybody exploded in laughter for a moment. It was just like, and it was such a beautiful moment because they were all just sort of laughing. It was like, there was something holy about it. It really was. It wasn't like he was trying to tear down what was being said or anything. It was just like a kind of observation, but it was like a shared, like a really nice shared moment. And it even allowed for a continued discussion about Kavana and something like that. But it was just like looking around at them and their faces when they, when they were just like laughing at that for a couple minutes. That, or a couple seconds, I mean, that it was holy. There was something holy about that
Holy
moment.
humor. Okay.
Yes.
I
Yeah.
hear that. I hear that.
I just wanted to share it.
Okay. So the truth is, laughter and humor has been investigated, discussed, and researched for thousands of years. As far back as Aristotle, who believed that it was about, I laugh when I feel my own superiority over someone else. I avoided the pitfall of this guy who slipped on the banana peel. Laughter is an expression of that sense of superiority. Groucho Marx once said, what's funny? He says, when a guy in a $3,000 suit walking in a very dignified fashion on the sidewalk slips on a banana peel. What is hilarious? When the same guy steps carefully over the banana peel into an open sewer. Now, it's interesting that that is funny. And
Yes, it is.
so Aristotle would say, yeah, it's a feeling of my superiority. There are others, like Sigmund Freud said, as type of like masked aggression. I masked my aggression with a joke, with laughter. I saw in the European Journal of Psychology, they had an analysis of a joke, which is unfortunate because, as you know, a joke is like a frog. When you dissect it, it dies. So, but
Yes.
okay, so here's the joke, and you may have heard it, but basically, a priest walks into a barber store for a haircut. And afterwards, the barber says, he says, how much is that? Barber says, no charge for a man of God. And the father says, God bless you. Thank you so much. And he leaves. The next day, as the barber comes to his store, he sees an envelope waiting at the door from Father Mulcahy. And inside is a $10 bill.
Clearly, you've watched
Thank
me.
you very much. Yes. And
That's an
he
indication that
says,
you've
oh,
watched me.
that's very
Yeah.
nice. Makes the barber feel good. Then, a few days later, an imam walks in, gets a haircut, and the barber, and he says, offers to pay. Barber says, no, for a man of God, any religion, that's fine, no charge. So the next day, he walks to the store, and as he comes to the door, there's an envelope waiting outside, and it says from, Imran, et cetera, and $10. With a thank you note. Fantastic. Then, a few days later, a rabbi walks in, comes in for the haircut. And afterwards, the rabbi says, how much is that? And the barber says, no charge for a man of God. I respect all religions and all men of God. And the rabbi says, God bless you. Thank you so much. Next day, as he comes to the barber store, he sees waiting at the door 10 rabbis.
Yes.
So,
Yes.
yeah.
We should have a laugh track.
We should have a laugh track, yes.
Yes.
Now, according to the European Journal of Psychology, the article I saw, this is a aggression towards Jews in this joke. It's anti-Semitic. Now, I don't know if it's masked. I mean, it's pretty, sometimes British humor is like that. Churchill, the famous exchange, he hated Lady Astor. She hated him. She once said to him, Winston, if I were your wife, I'd poison your tea. And he said, if I were your husband, I'd drink it. So someone asked him where, what's the guy's name? Clement Attlee, Prime Minister, who Churchill also hated. They said, where is he? He's not in Parliament today. He says, he's out on a speaking tour, stirring up apathy. Anyway, so masked aggression. Others say that it's a matter of communication. Paradoxes. The example is a computer programmer whose wife says to him, listen, when you come back from work, stop in at the grocery store, get me bread. If they have eggs, get me a dozen. So he comes home with a dozen loaves of bread. His wife says, what the heck? He said, they had eggs. Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Right. Or Yogi Berra was a master of that stuff, right? No wonder nobody comes here anymore. It's always so crowded.
Yes.
So, that's a communication paradox. So it's interesting. And where is the first humor that we find in the Torah? So the first laughter as we all know, is when Sarah and Abraham are informed that they will have a child. She's 90, he's 100, a child who'll change the face of the planet and he'll carry the heritage of monotheism forward. They laugh, they both laugh. And actually God says, and his name will be called Yitzchak, he will laugh.
Yeah.
So it's type of interesting, at the very beginnings of the Jewish people, the very name of our patriarch is based on laughter, which is a little weird and wonderful.
Yes.
And the first example of Jewish humor, which is actually pointed out by Reb Samson Raphael Hirsch, is the Jews come out of Egypt, confronted by the Red Sea. Behind us, I guess from the north, is coming the Egyptian army. To the east is the Red Sea. To the west are cliffs, temples of idolatry, etc., carved into the cliffs. To the south is a horrific desert, basically trapped. Now, my guess is most people in that situation would just cry, oh no, this is terrible, what's going to happen? What do the Jews say to Moses? This is in Exodus 14. They said to Moses, oh, were there not enough graves in Egypt? Is that why you took us to the desert? I mean, Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch says, classic example of Jewish cynicism, right? Shortage of graves? Is that why you took us to the desert? Real estate issue?
I mean, now that sounds like the aggression model, that they're sort of like attacking, they're using humor as a tool of aggression.
It seems like that.
Yeah.
But it's also classic in like there's an expression in Yiddish, you know, let's say people are passing around something and they skip you. Here's chocolate, and they skip you. Now, what would most people say? Oh, excuse me, could I get some of that chocolate? In Yiddish, the expression is my neshama from klotcher, which means, is my soul made of wood? Now, a person has to figure out, well, obviously his soul is not made of wood. Ah, he wants chocolate. It's like, it's this classic roundabout way of doing things. So, as I'm sure you also heard from Reb Moshe, he discussed this many times in class. Reb Moshe Shapiro, we're referring to here. By the way, a book just came out of Reb Moshe's classes on three pages, folios of Chelek, one of the chapters of Sanhedrin. And according to the introduction, he gave something like 650 classes.
We were present
for some of them.
We were present for some of those.
So that's 22 pages of Talmud. He gave 650 classes. This is a 500-page book, which covers three of those daf. I think Tzadik Vav to Tzadik Daf. It's like mind-boggling. In any case, Reb Moshe Shapiro, if such an output of classes, you've got to imagine he would talk about humor and laughter at some point. And he had a great sense of humor.
He did. He did. And he liked a good joke.
I remember there was an English guy in class, Rabbi Laufer, himself, great Torah scholar.
Reuven Laufer.
Reuven Laufer, Rabbi Reuven Laufer. He's English. And I don't know, he said something about England in the class, and Reb Moshe looked at him, and he said in English, Reb Moshe says, you know why the sun never set on the British Empire? And I was like, what? He says, because Hashem, God, doesn't trust them in the dark. So that was, you know, that was classic.
He also, by the way, told a joke. It might have been about a British prime minister. It could have been Attlee. It was a joke, I think, that somebody else had said. It was a famous joke about him, but he said the joke, which is that his car pulled up to 10 Downing Street, the door opened, and nobody exited.
Yes,
he was once on a sort of rant about history. He was on a rant about history. So, yeah.
He actually had a great sense of humor, and I think the jokes were funnier because they came from someone who was so, with such gravitas, so serious.
Yes.
I remember he was talking about the Western world's relationship to spirituality. So he said, it was in Sukkah. So I was sitting in the Sukkah with Rabbi Hananya Greenwald. We were sitting in Reb Moshe's Sukkah. And he said, he says, I want to tell you a joke from the Turkish Ottoman Empire era. A ship's captain in the Ottoman Navy was told to go on patrol. He was supposed to go to the island of Malta in the Mediterranean. And there was a lot of fog and ground, and you know, it was not possible. And he got lost and he did not find Malta. She gets back to base, turns back to base, and the commander says, "What happened?" And he says, "I'm sorry to report, sir, but Malta does not exist." So Moses said, "That's the Western world when it comes to spirituality. I didn't find it, so it doesn't exist." It was, we were both laughing our heads off because it was how he said it was very
funny. He knows how to tell a joke.
Yes, he does.
Although I had one time, he came to visit my room, and I had a picture on the wall. It was, I had once visited London, and I went to Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. This is like 45 years ago. I went to Madame Tussauds Wax Museum, and I had a picture taken with me next to the Pope. The Pope, it looked, you know, these, they look so realistic. And I thought it'd be funny. So there's, I had a picture standing next to the Pope. I don't know which Pope, John Paul II, some Pope. And so, and then I had this, it was actually a really nice looking photograph. And I had it like on my wall in Yeshiva. So I had it in my room, and Ramosha came to the room, and he, and I had, I didn't, you know, I wasn't even thinking about it. And then I noticed him looking towards that picture, and my heart, you know, like sank, and I am full of dread. And then he goes up to it. He goes, "Ata choshev sheze matzchik? Do you think this is funny?" "Ze lo matzchik. This is not funny." Then he took it off the wall and dropped it in the garbage can. But that was a lesson on what is not funny.
That's correct.
Right. He didn't just tell us what's funny.
Correct.
He told us what's not funny.
Not funny. That is true. That is true. Yeah. So now, Reb Moshe commented on laughter, and he said, "What is it that makes us laugh?" So he disagreed with all the above. He was basing his understanding of laughter on the fact that Yitzchak is called Yitzchak, who will laugh. What Reb Moshe said is, laughter is when we detect absurdity. Things are going in one direction, then suddenly it twists to a completely different, unanticipated, completely twist at an absurdity. He says, and so Yitzchak is being born to this elderly man, elderly woman in a corner of the world, right there, type, right, corner of the world. And Hashem is saying, not only will you have a son, but he will lead a great nation, he will create a great nation, they will bring your heritage to the world. It's like absurd. And indeed, the existence of the Jewish people, to some degree, is absurd. We should, right? And the existence of Israel, the state of Israel, the Jewish people, there's an absurdity about it, which makes one laugh. I mean, but not complete laughter. But the laughter, Reb Moshe said, is that you're tasting a little bit of a future world where we'll look back at this world and see that this whole world was absurd. You know, it's the world of redemption. The world of the messianic world, we'll look back and think all the things we thought were powerful are meaningless. All the things we thought, you know, were a threat, they're not a threat. And you look back at that and you'll laugh. And he says, as we know in the very famous psalm, as Yimales Kokpino, then in the future, our mouths will be full of laughter.
Of that kind of laughter, you would have that even if nobody else was present. In other words, you're not necessarily laughing at somebody. You couldn't call it aggression. It's nothing about your relationship with another person. You could be all by yourself.
100%.
And this is not a form of communication. It's just a kind of emerging expression because of that realization that you had. When you have that kind of realization, when you see something, you see it as real, as a kind of truth that was unexpected. It is just a part of human expression to laugh in a situation like that.
100%. And Reb Moshe pointed out that laughter actually brings me to some level of happiness.
Yes,
if I laugh, I feel a little happy. He says, because I'm tasting a little bit of the future, right? Laughter is associated with happiness. I'll tell you the great, one of my favorite, my favorite Hasidic story.
This is number one.
This is number one in the charts of Hasidic stories.
On your list.
Yes, on my list. Reb Simcha of Pshischa. For God's
not
sake,
a name you could say
don't
fast.
Ask me to spell it. No.
Yeah, and do not say it fast five times in a row.
Reb Simcha Bunim Pshischa.
Yeah.
Was before he was a full time Rebbe, he was the CFO of a lumber plant in Danzig. It was owned by type of like a modern Orthodox family who liked Hasidim. And anyway, he had a brilliant mathematical mind. He was also good at business, and he was the CFO. So he's walking along the banks of a river with some students. It had been a dark and stormy night. And a shot rang. Oh, sorry, no, that was a different story. But it had been a dark and stormy night, and yes. the river was flowing reasonably fast, quite full, and there was mud along the banks. And one of the students slips in the mud, slides into the river. And none of them could swim. Swimming was not a thing with 19th century Polish Hasidim. Right? You know, you didn't have the Satmar synchronized swim team, was not a thing.
I said, I like the
Bell's water polo. Yes,
nice. Yes.
Well, that's not Hungary. It was Hungary. Yeah, that was not Poland. But
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, so in any case, they're running along. This guy in the river, he's basically given up. He knows he's going to die. Reb Simcha Bunim yells at the guy in the river in Yiddish. He yells at him. He says, "Give him gristzim leviusim," which means give my regards to the Leviathan. The mystical secret, give our regards to the Leviathan. Something changes in the demeanor of the guy in the river, and he starts thrashing around, and he actually is able to make it close enough to shore that they can drag him out, and his life is saved. And the students ask the Rebbe, like, okay, it worked, but what were you thinking? The Rebbe said, very simple. The verse says in Isaiah, Ki basimcha tseitzeu, which means we usually translate, they shall go forth with joy. He says, I translated it more literally. With joy, you can get out of anything. He says, I realize if I can inject a little bit of happiness into his mind, one neuron will yell across the synapse to the other neuron and say, dude, that was funny. Then he will have some level of happiness, and that will actually give him strength, confidence, and hope, and he'll save himself. Which
and
is
it also has the, it stops a mode of thinking in its track. Like you're like, if he's assuming that he's going to die, he's like in this kind of trap of thinking that he's going to die, and he's sort of a victim to it. He can't get out of it. But when you tell a joke like that, you break the sort of magic of that way of thinking. You stop it for a moment and allow for new thought to come in, which could also be one of the benefits of a joke. It just disrupts this earlier pattern of thinking, and which might also help explain the value of telling a joke before you're learning, or things like that, because it just like disrupts a previous patterns of thought for a moment, and then maybe allows you to go somewhere else.
Opens them up. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why. In fact, I think it's the Tanya who actually says that an explanation for that statement in the Talmud, which is that it's in Shabbos 30b, which is that Rav used to always start, Rabba used to start his classes with a joke. So if I remember the Tanya, do I have it here somewhere? But if I remember correctly, the Tanya actually says it's type of like, in the same way that eating good food and drinking good wine expands your mind, opens you up, he says the laughter or the joke does the same thing. It opens you up and expands, which is pretty much what you are saying. And we see laughter as something which is, the fact that laughter can make you happy means there's a holy aspect to it. There's a beautiful Gemara, Talmud in Tanis 22a, about a rabbi who's in the marketplace, and He meets Eliyahu. I don't know. I've never met Eliyahu in the market, like Machane Yehuda. But
You've met him in other places, but not in the
not
marketplace.
Machane Yehuda, right? So he meets Eliyahu and he asks him, "Tell me, looking around this market, who is destined for the world to come here? Who are some real genuine members of the world to come club?" Eliyahu points to two people, apparently brothers. The rabbi says, "Who are these?" Rav Brocker, his name was the rabbi. Rav Brocker says, "What is your occupation?" They said, "Well, we're funny people. We make sad people laugh, and we see people who are arguing, we make them laugh as well." And he says, "So wow, that means that's that level of or rather that activity is something which deserves tremendous reward in the world to come, just to make people happy through laughter." There's various. We know there's a fascinating responsa of the Maharit, of Yosef de Trani. So there was in Salonika in Greece, which was part of the Ottoman Empire, and 17th century. So Jews were enrolled in different communities to pay jizya. Jizya is the tax that the Muslims would exact from people who are non-Muslims, aside from whatever federal income, state, whatever. There was also jizya. You're not a Muslim, you pay a tax. That was universal in every Muslim state, country, etc. So there were Jews who were what's known as Megurashim, people from Spain who had left Spain, the Sephardi Jews, and there were the Toshavim, the locals. And there was a lot of tension and friction between the two groups. Not a lot of love lost between the groups. So you had the local Romaniot or Greek Jews, and then you had the Sephardi Spanish Jews. One of the Spanish Jews was accidentally listed in the congregation of Romaniot Jews. And he objected strenuously, and the local Jews said, "Oh, come, ridiculous." And he yelled at them and he said, "Yevanim nikbetsu alai, the Greeks have surrounded me," which of course we sing on Hanukkah as the Greek enemies have surrounded us. And
Yes.
the local Jews wanted to put him in cherem, in ban of excommunication, for insulting them and calling them after the Yevanim, the Greek enemies of the Jewish people. So the rabbi, I guess, must be the rabbi, wrote to the Maharit, one of the great rabbis of the time. The Maharit gives a number of reasons that you should not do cherem. He says, first of all, a person cannot be, you cannot seize upon a person's behavior in a moment of passion.
Right,
It's a
right.
person's moment. He says, number one. Number two, the Talmud says that someone who speaks Greek, a Jew who speaks Greek, why? Because we're talking about witnesses who are clearly Jewish, who sign on a wedding contract or a get a divorce, right? And it calls them Yevanim, Greeks who sign. He says, okay, they're Jews who speak Greeks. They're called Greeks. It's not an insult. And then he tells a great story. He says, sometimes also a joke is sometimes okay. You know what I mean? So he tells a story. There was a rabbi, Abuhav, who was a survivor of the Inquisition, who had apparently lost an eye. I'm not sure if it was a result of torture, but he had only one eye. And he's walking with three students. This may be in Israel, I think. And he and the three students are on a walk, and there's a rock at the side of the road, and they sit down on this stone to rest. And one of the students says, "Rabbi, if you'll permit me, I feel there's an appropriate verse that describes our current situation." And Rabbi Abuhav says, "What verse? What are you talking about?" And he quotes a verse in Zechariah, which is actually the Haftorah we read on Chanukah. And the verse is, "And there will be, v'haya al even achat, there will be on one stone, shiva einayim, seven eyes."
Awesome. Awesome.
The verse actually means seven facets on the stone, but
Yeah.
literally it means seven eyes. So the three students of Rabbi Abuhav, that's seven eyes on one stone.
Yeah.
So
That was awesome.
Rabbi Abuhav said, "If I was not in a good mood, I would put you in cherem. I would excommunicate you." But anyway, what we see from there is sometimes if it's done, if he's a good mood and it's a joke, it's okay. And I think I remember seeing in a commentary on the Code of Jewish Law, on the abbreviated Code of Jewish Law called Sha'arim Mitzuyanim Bahalacha by Rav Braun, who actually says that sometimes Even though normally certain things may be prohibited to say, I'm not allowed to insult you in general. But he says if it's a good line, it might be considered on the level of honest as beyond control. It's such a good line, you can't control yourself. You know what I mean? So there are situations like that, maybe, where you just have to say the line. And, but in any case, we do see some leeway given to humor, and a value to it, right? Both
Can
in.
I make a distinction here?
Please.
And that is, so far, we've been talking about sort of pragmatic. On the one hand, we've been talking about the pragmatic use of humor. So you're sort of manufacturing, like a joke that is manufactured for the purpose of eliciting laughter. Like, yeah. So you're, and this, so it would be considered a good thing if that laughter then helped the person who's laughing. So if, like, with those two badchanim, the two guys who make people laugh, so they are purposefully sending this manufactured joke in the direction of somebody who's sad, for the purpose of changing that, disrupting their previous mood, or changing their mood to happiness, or maybe in the at the beginning of learning, the it's for the purpose of opening the people up, like opening them up to an idea, or again maybe disrupting previous learning or something. So there's like a pragmatic benefit, and then we talked about laughter that's just almost just a natural reaction to
Spontaneous.
a spontaneous kind of human reaction to a certain kind of situation. But what about what we would call play? In other words, where you're sort of manufacturing a situation, the goal of it is to be happy, or to feel good, or to be happy, but that is your only result. Like for children, I remember, I don't remember who's, I think it was quoted by the Brisker Rav. I don't know who actually said it, but somebody said, if you don't let children play when they're young, then they're going to try to find ways to play when they're, when they're adults, or something like that. In other words, it is appropriate. It's appropriate for children to play. What is play? Play is engaging in some kind of activity that's just fun, that it makes you feel good. And there's jokes like, when you see kids together and they're making a joke, like that joke about the egg whites of heaven. It's a part of play. It's not, there is no other benefit than the fact that the people that are associated with it are feeling good. Now, the notion of just playful laughter, playful laughter.
But even playful laughter makes you a little happier. And
Yeah.
that's a benefit. Rav Nachman of Breslov, one of his most famous statements, he's in Likutei Moharan 2, number 24. He says, Mitzvah gedola liot b'simcha tamid. It is a great mitzvah. I'm not sure if he literally means one of the 613. I don't think so. But it's a great mitzvah to be happy always. And later on, that's always quoted, and that's a famous song. What's not quoted as much is what he says a little later, in which he says that he says, even though being depressed is not a sin per se, its impact is far worse than sin. He says, you should try everything you can to always be as happy as possible. He says, everyone has difficulty in life. He says, you have to tzarich lachriach et atzmo bekoach gadol. You have to try to force yourself with power to be happy. Ulasameach et atzmo, and to rejoice. Bechol asher yuchol, in any way you can, afilu b'milei d'shtuta, even with silliness. I think play, silliness. So he's saying that the risk of depression and of sadness is so great that we have to try to do anything. And it's interesting, if you would look at the biography which I'm sure you have, of Rav Nachman of Breslov, the last thing you'd expect to put from him would
No.
be he's the man of joy, laughter.
Right.
Is that
I agree. Agreed.
he lost his wife, he lost his child, he became very sick, he was abused by Jews, he was abused by non-Jews, his house burnt down, he had to exile himself. Oh my gosh. Some rabbi's got a nice life driving around in a fancy Genesis, right? He's got a beautiful house with a pool, et cetera, right? And he says, be happy, take it with a grain of salt. Someone like Rav Nachman of Breslov, a person who was who suffered in the most horrific ways imaginable,
Yeah.
was a prophet of joy.
Yeah.
Was a and he says Mille Destusa, yeah. And there are some of his followers take that very, very literally, but there is something to that. I think even for adults, a certain level of that type of play
I
is.
remember Rabbi Gottlieb, he had a one of his recorded lectures was on psychological needs. And he was
Yes.
talking about that, like the need that even though you could ask yourself, like, let's say you went to watch a baseball game, you went to a baseball game. So somebody would ask you, like, you went to a baseball game? Like, this is what a Talmud Chacham does, you know, he goes to a baseball game. But, you know, somebody could argue that every once in a while you need to go to a baseball game. In other words, every once in a while, like you're saying, or maybe like Rav Nachman is saying, that you have to be mindful that you're not slipping into depression. Now, I remember Rabbi Eichenstein was once talking about this, Rabbi Dov Eichenstein, bless his memory. And he once made the distinction. He said, you could, I, he said, I, you could easily justify going to, you know, to the symphony. He's you know, for arguments such as this, but he said that the difference would be whether if you get season tickets to the symphony or you went to the symphony. In other words, if you build it into the fabric of your life that it's now a regular thing, he felt like that's too much. If I pick, you know, every once in a while, I say to myself, you know what, we need this, or my to my wife, you know, we just need to have a pleasant time together, or you know, time with your children, just to enjoy like a happy, pleasant time, something playful. So you should do it. But you know, you
Absolutely.
don't have to, it doesn't have to, you know, be built into your schedule. Although it could, I mean, I guess in some depressing times you might need to build it into your schedule just to have it. Yeah.
During COVID, I think a lot of people did that. I two incidents. I was
Yeah.
at an airport traveling with a fairly famous rabbi,
Yeah.
and
You traveling alone is traveling with a famous rabbi, Mordechai.
I'm not sure if he'd appreciate my telling you his name, but.
Yeah.
Airport, and it was they just installed it's a long time ago. They just installed the moving walkways, and he gets on and he type of run, he runs on it, and we get off and I say, well, what's up? And he says, I just love the feeling of speed. I feel like I'm Superman when I'm on one of these things. It was like very I was just very surprised by that.
Yeah.
Also, there is a there's a book Making of a Godel by Rav Nosson Kamenetsky.
I
So,
just want to mention that Mordechai did not discuss the mention of this book with me. Of course, if we had discussed it beforehand, I would have cautioned him against quoting from this book. Go ahead.
I was at Rav Nosson Kamenetsky's house a number of times for
You
Shabbos.
were roommates, weren't
His
you
son,
roommates with his son?
yes,
Yeah.
son was a roommate of mine. In fact,
Yes.
when I came to Itri,
Reuven, what was his? What
Reuven
was his?
Kamenetsky,
Reuven
when I came
Kamenetsky.
to
Yeah.
Itri, every
Yeah.
roommate they gave me for the first year was like this guy who was just one of the super, because I think they were trying to, help
No,
me.
they sensed it, Mordechai. They
They
sensed it already then. This is
here are
part of
my
the
three
first class
roommates.
treatment
This
that
is me.
Mordechai Becher got. First class treatment from the very beginning.
One
He did
roommate.
not travel coach like the rest of us.
One roommate, Rabbi Rachmiel Fried, who founded Dallas Area Torah Association, great Torah scholar.
Rosh
Brilliant Talmud
Kollel,
Chacham,
yes.
I'm at Roshkol. Number two, I had
Moshe Eichenstein.
Moshe Eichenstein, who's now a Rebbe. He's a Hasidic Rebbe.
He is the Triska Rebbe.
He would be lying in bed and reading the Guy of Vilna's translation of Euclid's Geometry, right, for bed night reading and other books like that. And I'd be coming back from a jog, right? I had a poster up of an Australian football player. It was, I don't know
Reading
what
magazines
it would
about
be, right?
weapons,
And
various weapons.
the other one was Reuven Kamenetsky, who's today a great Talmid Chacham, and then was also pretty good. And
His father was our Rosh Hashiva, one of our Rosh Hashiva.
unbelievable. So
Yeah.
anyway,
The
so
author of
yes.
The Making of a Golem.
And then in that book, he has a story in which the Chazon Ish, Rav Avraham Yeshaya Karelitz, when he still lived in Vilna, used to go swimming in whatever river they had, I don't know, the river near Vilna. And a visiting rabbi came to Vilna and he said, "Come, let's go for a swim." All right. He felt it was a little weird. Anyway, he goes into the water, and as he's in the water, he feels some splashes. And he turns around, the Chazon Ish is splashing him. And he said, "Well, what's the Rav? What are you doing? What?" And he Chazon Ish said, "If you don't know how to play, you cannot come up with good ideas in the Torah.
Oh, that's
You've got
beautiful.
to have
That's
certain imagination. You've
beautiful.
got to play."
Beautiful.
I remember I once spent a few days in summer with Rabbi Moshe Rom, Alav Shalom, who was
Yes,
the Rosh
Rabbi
Hashiva, one
Shimon.
of our Rosh Hashivas, and he had
Yes.
an apartment in Ashdod near the beach. So I went there for a few days with him and his family. And Rav Osher Rubinstein, the Mashgiach, Alav Shalom, was also there.
He had a kolel in Ashdod. Did he have it at the time, or was he just hanging out?
Just hanging out.
Yeah.
So we're three of us at the beach. I felt this was the most absurd situation I've ever, I'm standing there with these two towering Torah scholars and
Sipping a margarita,
all in swimsuits at the beach, and some
reading a novel.
Arab fishermen were catching fish, and I think it was catfish, and we were in a discussion about the kashrut of the fish. It was like, I thought I'm in some type of Franz Kafka novel at this point. This is like just so very, very bizarre, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, but there's something to that. So play, and yeah, you are 100%
I
correct.
remember, every year our shul would have a picnic in Milwaukee, Beth Yehuda, it was called, still called. And I remember as a young boy, we would have a baseball game at the picnic, and Rabbi Twersky, Rav Michal Twersky, he should live long and in good health, would play. He would get up and he'd, and we it everybody it was such a joy that he would play with us, that he was playing baseball with us. It was just such a joy. Everybody loved it. Everybody just it just brought just tremendous joy to everybody.
I'll tell you similarly, some of the greatest of our rabbis, there's a book here called The Dream of the Poem by Peter Kohl, who's a professor at Hebrew University. So it's the poems of the great rabbis of Spain, medieval
I
Spain.
own this.
Great
Somebody
book.
might ask, why do I own this?
Because I recommended it, I think.
Yes, you did. And I bought it. And
So
I've read it.
one poem there is by
Yeah.
Rav Moshe Ibn Ezra, great Torah scholar. It's a poem about chess. And there's some comedy poems, Avram Ibn Ezra, a different Ibn Ezra, not related, who writes, he says, he talks about his poor luck. When it his poor fortune when it came to making a living, and he says, "The heavens and the stars are against me." He says, "If I,
Is the Ibn Ezra.
yes, the Ibn Ezra,
He's
he
the
said,
Ibn
if
Ezra. Yeah.
only if my business would be candles, the sun would never set. If I'd start selling shrouds, I would cause the resurrection of the dead." So that's Rabbi
Yeah.
Yehuda Halevi, who, of course, one of the most famous poets, author of the Kuzari. He's got a bunch of comedy poems. He's got riddles. He's got comedy. One of them, my favorite, which I can relate to, he says, "I looked in the mirror one day and I saw a white hare. I plucked it out and the white hare said to me, 'You've defeated me one on one. What will you do when I come back with my friends?'"
Beautiful,
Like that's
beautiful.
great stuff. So it's type of interesting. We know that Jews have always been, and not, I don't know about always, hard to know. We've had a great sense of humor for much of our history. And certainly in contemporary Western world, 20th, 21st century, Jewish comedians, lots of them, lots of us.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should call us, but
Yeah. You should call it us.
I saw a great story.
It is definitely
Yes.
us.
Okay.
There is no them, only
I'm
us.
talking about comedians, though. I don't know if I
Us.
identify us
Us.
as
You with a capital U. Go ahead.
okay. All right.
Period. All right.
Is Jerry Seinfeld.
Seinfeld.
Seinfeld, sorry.
That's
One
okay.
of the, no doubt, I think one of the great experts on humor. Very funny guy. I love his stuff.
Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld, Field?
Feld.
Seinfeld. He once said, why, someone asked him, an interviewer asked him why Jews are so prominent in humor. He says, I think it's because Jews have always very often been outsiders. And you're looking at things from the outside, you see the absurdity that someone inside doesn't see. This, by the way, dovetails beautifully with Ramosha Shapiro's explanation of humor
Yeah.
being absurdity.
Right.
I believe
And
that's
also saves it
right.
from just being an aggressive act to tear down people in power or whatever it is.
But we're outsiders. Not only we, I think I'd like to extend Jerry's idea that it's not only that we're outsiders to very often society because of their, but we're outsiders to this world. We type of live in a bit of a different dimension. We're connected to a different time, understanding our calendar, our historical connection, our the Torah. Jews are, we're type of outside the regular flow, ebb and flow of the world, right? And sometimes we're forced to be outside, but I think inherently we are, and hence there's a the Jewish humor is that we're looking at things from the outside as observers, and an observer can sometimes see the absurdity.
And I've heard people make the comment that you can't be a deeply spiritual person and not have a sense of humor. Maybe for that reason that you're describing. Because once you get into the depth, you start to see all the kind of superficial elements of the stuff on the surface. And as you're going, it just, you have that kind of, again, almost innate reaction to the absurdity of it, that it's funny. Yeah, that
Just
makes
reminded,
perfect
I don't know,
sense.
just came to my mind two hilarious incidents with my son Pinchas when he was in regular army a long time ago. He said they he had goggles, combat goggles, protect your eyes. They were scratched, so he was a sharpshooter back then. So he goes to the storage room. There's a guy sitting there with shirt open to there, like medallion, it's like smoking. And he says, listen, can I get new goggles? And the guy says, why? He says, they're scratched, can't see well. The guy says, not broken, can't change them. Lo shvurim, lo machlifim. They're not broken, we don't exchange them. My son said, I can't see properly. I need to, sh I can't see properly. He says, lo echpatli, not my problem. I don't care. So my son said, I says, but they can't, he says, lo shvurim, lo machlifim. They're not broken, we don't change. He says, okay. My son goes around the corner, puts the goggles on the ground, stomps on them with his army boots, picks up the pieces, comes back around the corner. He says, now? The guy says, okay. And he switches them. The
That's awesome.
other incident was recently, they were on the border of Gaza, and they were told that a singer is coming to entertain the troops.
Oh, this was awesome.
And
I heard him tell,
oh,
Penny told us it.
he
Penny
told
told it,
us
right? Yeah, but tell it
that.
again.
Yes, he said they were told that they all were told Yishai Ribo, who is one of the greatest performers in the Jewish, a phenomenal singer, was coming to their base, and they're all very. Everyone sitting around. Turns out it was a guy called Yishai Yivo, not the same guy, and he walks on. Everyone's like, now
I'm
how.
sure
He must have
that
felt
they
terrible.
all politely listened to him anyways,
I have
but
no
didn't
idea.
walk off.
I hope so. I hope
Just
so.
leave him there.
I hope so. I had I just want to tell you when I was long time ago. So I was in when I did army service in during basic training, it was all people in their average age 30s going into the army in their professions, like doctors, rabbis, lawyers, engineers, etc., from a whole range of countries, mostly new immigrants. So I'm standing next to a German, immigrant who knew no Hebrew, and an Ethiopian immigrant on the other side, neither of them knew Hebrew. But there were simultaneous translations of the commands into Russian and English, but not into Amharic or German. So I'm standing there trying to explain stuff to the German in Yiddish. Yiddish is not one of the great military languages, as you might know. No.
But it's good for jokes.
Yes, and shockingly, the Ethiopian did not know Yiddish.
It's
I was like, how could, well, anyway.
what's the likelihood of that?
So one of the things I told us, we had a sisma, meaning a code word. If you're on guard duty and someone's approaching, you yell at them, "I saw sisma, stop, give me the code." They give you one part of it and you give them the second half, so you both know each one is okay. The code at the time, I can safely say this, they don't use that anymore. Kapiot kesef. This is 1992,
Silver spoons.
something like that. Silver spoon. So someone's approaching, he yells at you, kapiot. You yell back, kesef. Everyone's good. So I'm trying to, and you also, before, if they keep coming, you say, I saw a stop. And then you say it in Arabic, which is, stop, stop,
I'm
or
pretty
I'll.
sure that's not it.
I think it is. I don't
Oh,
know.
it is? Say that again, then. Say it again slowly.
Wakif,
Oh,
I
okay. All
think
right,
that's it.
nice. Okay.
It was a long time, 1992.
Yeah. No, I'm sure you got it.
I think it
Yeah.
was, I think
Yeah.
that's what it was. So anyway, I'm trying to impress upon the German and the Ethiopian the exchange, which is not
Oh,
easy.
man, if they don't get this right, people could die.
So I'm walking perimeter of the base, and in the guard tower is the German, and approaching is the Ethiopian to switch. And the German yells at the Ethiopian Jew. He says, "Kapiot kesef." He yells.
I
Sorry.
lost you there.
Yes,
Yeah.
okay. He yells at him the code. And the Ethiopian yells back at him, "Wakif, wakif," which means stop in Arabic. And this sounds familiar to the German. He says, "Okay." This is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Somehow, this is the army
Yes. One more
that
incident, and then we'll end. I think
protects
we'll
the
end with
Jewish
this.
people.
That's right. I'm up with first time I'm up in the guard tower. I was in a base in Dotan. Go up to the guard tower. Before I went up, the officer in charge, Dudu, says there's a field telephone up there. It's one of these old field telephones. This is a long time ago. Old field. He says, that telephone is life and death. Do not touch that telephone. Do not use it. It's a life and death situation telephone. I said, okay. 2 o'clock. I got up 2 o'clock in the morning. My shift starts. About 3 in the morning, the life and death phone rings. I'm like almost a heart attack. I pick it up and he says, hello. I said, hello. He says, the Dudu. I said, Ken, yeah, this is Dudu. He says, Rotse cafe, you want coffee? I said, are you serious? I said, yeah. Okay, he comes with coffee. Anyway, so humor can be found. I'm just reminded, my wife and I, we lived in Toronto for 4 years. There's a couple, we're a family's house for Shabbos, and his parents are survivors of the Holocaust. And they we're, the his this guy's father, very funny, actually. In fact, he survived because he used to tell jokes to the commandant, who was amused by this joke. Anyway, so he asked how my wife and I met. My wife's from Philadelphia, I'm from Australia. I said, we met, we did a an outreach educational camp in Sydney. And he looks at his wife, he says, ah, they also met at camp.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, that's ridiculous.
Was crazy. Only they could, we could not have made that joke.
Before you go, I just wanted to ask, as you brought this up towards the beginning, does Hashem have a sense of humor? Did you have I remember Moshe saying
Yes.
one example of Hashem's sense of humor is that he brought up Moshe in Paro's house. Now, see, he could have worked out that his salvation should come all, but just imagining that Paro himself is raising the one who's eventually going to be the Moshiach of the Jewish people. He said, that's an example of Hashem's sense of humor. I remember saying that once.
And there's anthropomorphic descriptions in which Hashem laughs in
yes.
Tehillim, in
Psalms. Well, what the Elio, they asked Elio after the Tanur Shel Achnoi, right?
Yes. What's Hashem doing? They said, he's laughing. Yeah. So we see in Tehillim also Hashem Yitzchak, right? Hashem laugh. So, yeah. And I think the fact that we have a sense of humor and we're created similar to God means that there are, that I'd imagine that that's so, yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, you look at certain animals and they just make you laugh. And Hashem, yeah, right? I mean, they're right? I mean,
yeah.
Right. So Hashem created them with it. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So thank you very much, everyone. Please listen, subscribe, recommend to your friends, share, do anything. Anything legal to, I think people
will spread the word. To spread the word.
The word. Spread the word. The yes. And thank you for watching, listening, etc. And God willing, we will see you next time.
I look forward to it.